So for myself, I mean, the whole subject of love is hard because my natural tendency is to push the world away.
Yeah.
And, I feel like I made some progress. But, you know, one of the greatest things for me has been sort of to adopt, you know, this attitude of enjoyment is wrong and having an aesthetic outlook on life and health. At first, I was raised Catholic and then got into, you know, very ascetic Hindu traditions.
Yeah.
And some of that, I carried it over into my Buddhist practice. And not because anyone told me that was right, but I had it like, sort of stuck in my brain.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm working on appreciating enjoying life and trying to enjoy life.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, always rub up against doing that in a wholesome way.
Yeah.
I also don't know where I'm going with what I'm saying, but I guess I just found it out, and I'm wondering what you think about that, and if you have any ideas about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think one is our Judeo-Christian background really conditions us to you can't enjoy yourself too much. You're falling into sin, but I think with the the reason I'm looking at my computer is because I had some. It struck a bell from the rule of Saint Benedict. That was the first guide to monastic training and sort of a sense of the. Moving in a spiritual training, but it and because Saint Benedict probably 600-700 years after 600-700 AD wasn't that long, was it? After so it's 1600-1700 years ago, and. But there, there was so much the sense of how they conceived of self, the early Christians and early Catholics in particular. That sense of this: truly, we are forbidden to do our own will, for Scripture tells us, "Turn away from your desires," and then. A man not only admits with his tongue, but is also convinced in his heart that he is inferior to all and of less value, humbling himself and saying with the prophet, "I am truly a worm, not a man, scorned by men and despised by the people." It's no wonder we're so screwed up. And I remember the... years ago, there's a talk by Ajahn Sujitho, and the title caught me, but I didn't recognize the reference, because of course sometimes Ajahn Sujitho is so clever in his use of language and concepts, and he's a very well written. But anyway, it's the talk is titled "Fellow Worms." And he's making fun of that, but it is it's something that sticks in our psyche, even if we grew up, you know, rejecting it, or not even knowing that it was part of our cultural heritage. But it seeps in, and I remember one time. There's a great BBC documentary on the royal family in Thailand. It was done in the 1970s, and the the interviewer is sitting with the king in his, I mean, it's in the palace, it's in the, in his, like, his communication room. He's got this incredible, I mean, this is in the 70s, and he's just got every kind of electronic gadget that he could find at the time that he's tuning in to find out as much, keep in contact with as much of the realm as he could. And but anyway, and of course he's also got, he's a solid practicing Buddhist, and he's, anyway, the interviewer, BBC interviewer, is asking the king of Thailand and about, you say, you know, see this, you know, you've got, you know, Buddhist shrines and you're a Buddhist, and this is a Buddhist kingdom, and, you know, what does Buddhism have to say about original sin? And the king looks really puzzled, and he said, but original sin, they don't really think like that. They think more like original purity. So it's really beautiful, where the king is kind of stumped. I said, well, you know, why would anybody think like that? But from a, you know, Buddhist perspective, so, yeah, I mean, the Buddha speaks of defilements and stains to unconsciousness, but those are what is called thills. Those are visitors. They come and go in the mind. And what we have the opportunity to do is to tap back into a fundamental purity or well-being that is there. Also, there's in this, the discourses, there's many discourses that are, again, because this is an oral tradition, then there's a lot of repetition. And so there's stock phrases that come up over and over again. And there's a series of discourses where the Buddha speaks of the causal conditions in growth and development in understanding and wisdom. And starting different starting points. Sometimes the starting point will be wise reflection. Sometimes the starting point would be virtue. Sometimes the starting point would be dukkha. But then it leads into, you know, with this as a causal condition and this and this and this. Then there's the arising of delight. And then with the arising of delight, there's the arising of joy. And then with the arising of joy, there's the arising of tranquility. The arising of tranquility, there's the arising of happiness. The arising of happiness, there's the arising of samadhi, or meditative stillness. And in some of those discourses, the Buddha actually stops and says, the happy mind is easily concentrated, or is easily settled. And then it's with say, meditative stillness or samadhi as a foundation, and there's the arising of seeing things as they truly are. Seeing things as they truly are, then there's dispassion. The things of, say, like of dispassion, letting go, these are rooted in, you know, delight, joy, tranquility, happiness. You know, and of course, those are all, they're skillfully cultivated, skillfully accessed, and they bring beneficial results. So it's a different relationship to happiness and not to be uh, um, In the same way that there's a word in the scriptural language for it has a, it's really hard to translate because it's oftentimes it's translated as merit, you know, and which, you know, it just doesn't get it. And in the Pali it's punya, in Thai it's bun, and so often Thai people ask, bun, how do you translate bun into English? And I said, I don't know, I've been trying for 40 odd years and I don't have a good translation for it. But often punya is translated, but what it means is the wholesome results of skillful action, so which is a circular way of talking about it. Often, you know, the standard translation is oftentimes merit, because it's. But there's a discourse where a couple of discourses where the Buddha says, monks, do not be afraid of punya. Sometimes that saying, punya is another word for happiness. Because oftentimes they sort of, I got to shoot for the liberation and meditative attainments. And he said, no, this is not disconnected from our skillful action, our skillful living, the happiness that comes from wholesome relationships, from wholesome action. These are not separate.